Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 232. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me this week is Dr. Jonathan Fast. He's always with me, but especially
with me
this week.
If not in body, then in spirit. But today, you get both.
Yeah, and he's actually, it's a really cool thing, and it's a reason why we haven't been around the last couple of weeks. John's been on a long trip to Mars. And that's why his internet connection isn't so great. We're using satellites. We're using satellites thanks to South Korea. Seoul has a brand new satellite system. We're using the satellite system from GoldenEye, the movie GoldenEye, and Contact. We're using both of those big satellites that were in jungles. And we're also
The CIA is helping us. To record this podcast.
So we're using a bunch of new initiatives, and
which is kind of funny because the Saudi environment is not that unlike the Mars environment.
So that's why John's really been in Saudi Arabia. He's been prepping for his trek
astronaut
to Mars.
Travel. Right. It took a month to get there because of the distance.
Well, actually, if you think about it, it's a lot faster. Yeah. But we're using this new nuclear fusion reactor engine, which gets you, I think it's like...
All right, let's get to recording.
Okay. So we got a great show lined up for you this week. It's going to be nice and tight. Lots of stuff to get to. First thing we're going to talk about quickly... to give you guys kind of a heads up of what I've been working on in case you don't follow me on the Facebook and the Twitter and stuff like that. And we kind of really haven't announced this. I don't know if I should announce this, but I'm going to anyways.
I really don't know if you should announce anything.
Why not?
I don't know. You always like to announce things prematurely.
I always do.
You're a premature announcer.
Also, I started smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day. So we got this cool thing called MBSC Thrive. We're partnering with Thrive to offer Mike Boyle strength and conditioning franchises throughout the world. We've already locked up our first group.
That's cool. Has Mike authorized you to announce this?
Yes. I've already mentioned it on Facebook. So
okay.
And our website's up and stuff like that. We have been talking with clubs and things like that. So... if you are a gym owner and that's something that you're interested in, you can just go to mbscthrive.com and check out the info there. We're only taking a limited amount of groups to start to make sure everything goes extra smooth. But it's the big project that I've been working on for the last couple months. It's been dominating my life. But I'm super proud of what we put together. And I think
I was going to say, I'll put in a non-paid plug, but, you know, from what you've told me about it, it's very cool, man. And if I was a gym owner, I'd absolutely be looking into this. I mean, you're going to align yourself with one of the names in the industry. And it's not just an alignment, it's a partnership. You become an affiliate. You become the part of the process that has made Mike Boyle so successful. So to me,
you basically get our gym, but you run it in your location.
Exactly.
Like we're there are no, you're literally getting the keys to a gym with, our name on it if you want to use it. And the cool thing is there have been other offerings like this in the past, but ours is substantially less expensive to get into. And we really thought about like the studio type, gyms as well. So, if it's like you and one other person, you have like a small, like 1,500, 2,000 square foot gym. I guess that's pretty big though.
Yeah.
But some relatively small, like a studio where you train, do some semi-private stuff. We have options for that as well. And it does scale based on the size of your gym. We're working with Perform Better to handle all the equipment needs if you need stuff, so we can do cool stuff with them. So... yeah, I figured I kind of owed a little bit of an explanation for what I've been up to the last couple months. And I will be offering, I do have a box of t-shirts that with our previous logo on it, with the awesome jacked dude on it. So I'm going to sell those, and we're going to get those out there to people. Now that I've finally moved in, it only took me 3 months to move into my apartment. So if you are interested in a FitCast t-shirt, please email me at questions@thefitcast.com with a subject line t-shirts. The t-shirts are $20. That will get it to your door, shipped to the United States. Email me for sizes and availability. We have white and black and gray. And we also have, I still have some women's t-shirts as well. So email me for availability. It's going to be first come, first serve. I know people have been asking for them. So I will make it an initiative to send those out and spend some time at night to put those in envelopes and get them out to people. So let me know. What's up, Lee? Oh, John, do you want to do what's up, Lee, this week?
Oh, hi, Kevin. Well, I'm doing a lot today.
Lee actually did have prior commitments with clients this morning, and I changed the time for the recording. So, but I'm going to insert an audio clip of her singing her late night phone service commercial.
That'll make her happy.
Right here. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back. We're going to have a cool discussion on training, and then we're going to hit the mailbag, so stick around. Kind of a new segment that we're going to be doing this week, a combination of a bunch of questions that we have gotten in the past and we never really hit on, and it will allow us to get some feedback from the audience and then share it next week. We tried doing this in the past, and like I said, you guys kind of have to email us your answers to this to provide some
interactive FitCast.
Yeah,
post it to our Facebook.
Yeah.
Tag, you can post it. Why don't we do this? Why don't you post it to your Facebook and tag either Kevin? Yeah, just tag Kevin, myself, me, or whatever. So you tag it to your kind of, or if a Twitter feed, then you can hash mark, you know, Kevin at the FitCast or something like that. And
social networking.
And answer the question. Social networking at its finest. So don't even bother email. Just put it on Facebook.
Okay, cool. So, you know, a lot of times we get questions about how we like to personally train and like what we're doing for training, because, you know, if it might help with other people's guidance or, you know, goal setting, things like that. So I think it's a cool discussion. So, I mean, John, you're kind of in a unique situation.
Right.
You know, how has your training changed since you've been out there? And, you know, what has been kind of like, what have your goals been for the last couple months, I guess?
It's actually been a blessing in disguise, because when I got here, I was very out of shape between the last year of grad school, my residency year. There's literally no time to train when I'm working like 16-hour days and just wanting to die when I come home, you know? So when I got here, I found myself with a lot of time, but a lot of work to do as well. And I also have the facilities here, which is very convenient. It's literally like I just walk outside my door and cross the street and I have my gym here, but it's a very poorly set up gym and there's no squat racks. There's a bad Smith machine, weights that, you know, dumbbells that go up to 90 pounds, which is enough for most things, but not really, you know what I mean? And there's just a lot, you know, wanting for training. So I started off kind of doing the sort of things that I would typically do, a lot of deadlifts and a lot of, you know, dumbbell bench press and whatever. And I had room to grow within that. But what I found was in the environment here also, there's a lot more where I'm just sitting around, not doing anything, especially even at work. We sit a lot. We go to the desert and sit on the desert floor. And I'm starting to develop back issues and hip issues. and really took a step back in my training, looked at what was going on, looked at deficiencies, and really reorganized everything that I've been doing. And so for the last, I don't know, at least since the New Year's, probably a little before that, I've been very focused on body weight, on core training, having my body be complete, you know, synergistic as best as I can and completely balanced. A lot of single leg work because I don't have a squat rack, so it's forced me to do more of the, you know, rear foot elevated split squats and single leg squats and rack pulls and deadlifts and things like that. And I've been working on a lot of more like almost gymnastic body weight stuff, like planches and things with rings and the TRX. And I'm actually enjoying a lot of what I'm doing. And in some regards, I'm not as strong as I used to be. But in other regards, I've never been this strong, especially as far as, you know, body alignment and positioning and being able to manipulate, you know, the position I'm in and the movement that I make. And it's been very cool. So I was just saying when we recorded the off topic, the gym is closed today. And I took the workout outside and went over to the playground where, you know, the kids play, and I set up the TRX and I was doing, you know, tuck push-ups off of benches and using the rings at the playground to, you know, swing up and down and stuff like that. And it was a lot of fun. So it's been a very different sort of workout that I'm used to, and I've enjoyed it a lot.
So you make sure that you get like a good playlist going on the
Yeah, pretty much.
So you're more or less training by yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have clients here and the stuff I do with my clients.
But not like a training partner.
No. Okay. So yeah, I'm all by myself.
Cool.
But it's been very cool, and I've appreciated that, you know, when you don't have facilities like you're used to. I mean, I used to work at the Rutgers gym where we trained the athletes, and I had pretty much anything I wanted. You know, now everything is so scaled back, but you get into kind of the raw bits of what training is, you know, when you're back to the planks and the push-ups and you know, the single leg stuff and the body weight stuff, you have to be very creative, but that creativity is really difficult. You know, the types of exercises that you'll encounter and use to challenge yourself are unbelievably difficult. So it's definitely expanded my kind of repertoire of things that I'll go into and use. And I don't necessarily train the majority of my clients like that, but there's certainly aspects of that have leaked into my training, and it's been very cool, you know, how I train clients and stuff.
Very interesting. All right, to kind of go into what I've been doing the last couple months, I think it's been about 6 weeks where I've been doing a little project, 6 weeks since things kind of really hit the fan and we had to get this thing going. So I was spending most of my days at the computer working on stuff and, you know, still trying to get in some hours at the gym, obviously coaching my athletes and coaching my clients. So time for training became smaller and smaller and smaller. Luckily I do have an Airdyne bike here at home and TRX and some stuff to, what I've been normally doing is like kind of leaving my TRX set up, on a perfect pull up, not perfect pull up, an Iron Gym pull up bar. And, you know, just as I go to get something to drink, knock out 15 TRX rows, something like that. So it's kept me somewhat sane, but this, I was hoping to talk to Lee about this, but we've always, in terms of nutrition, in terms of diet, in terms of weight management, in terms of set point theory, John, you've heard of this term,
mm-hmm.
set point theory?
Yep.
So
yep.
For those of you out there that don't know this fancy term, basically what it's talking about is you kind of get to a certain weight level, you sustain it for a couple months, your body gets comfortable there. And that is becomes kind of your set point. And whether you gain a couple pounds or lose a couple pounds, your body will kind of find its way back to that set point. You know, unless you do some extensive work to go one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, you know what? What's that?
I was going to say, I mean, it's basically a catch-all for the genetic influence
exactly.
of body weight. So – And it's not
the best guess that we have to that now, because there's a lot of research that's going into set point theory, because it's an important point. Because if someone comes in and they're predestined to be at a certain weight, give or take, then any amount of dieting or exercise that they would do wouldn't have an influence on their body weight. The more effort you put in, the less you're going to get out of it as you get closer to that set point. Most people that have lost weight and lost significant amounts of weight have dealt with that at one point or another.
Exactly.
That, you know, you start to plateau and whatever. The best guess that people have now is that there is a reality of set point. It is not set in stone, so that it is you can influence it, but there does seem to be a point
there's some magnet.
Yeah, there seems exactly a magnet. That's actually a good term. It is like a magnet.
Thanks,
Don. You can pull away from it, but it's going to pull you towards that point. Especially
gravity,
for people
that's
that,
better. It's like gravity. It's like a planet's gravity. Damn it! I should have said that first. Let's edit that out and put
anyway,
that in.
Absolutely. So. No, that's and everyone is a little bit different, but those are genetics, and there's nothing that we see in genetics in terms of exercise that can't be completely, you know, influenced if not overcome. Mm-hmm. You know, for some people, they'll never be incredible long distance runners, but they might be able to run long distance to a reasonable amount, but it may require twice as much effort and work for, let's say, a natural sprinter than it would be for someone that is naturally inclined to run distance. You know, so the same thing becomes the idea of the set point and the weight, where you, depending on what you, and you kind of already know that. Have you always been overweight? Have you always been very thin? You know, that goes back to the idea of the mesomorphs and the ectomorphs and the endomorphs, like this concept of what you were born with and the type of musculature you carry, the type of body fat that you carry, and knowing where you seem to fall and the type of weight that you carry around can be a lot of information on how you need to go about your weight loss or muscle gaining activities. But it doesn't appear that it can't be overcome, but it does appear to have a significant influence on your ability to get to a desired body weight and body composition.
I thought that's exactly what I said.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay,
I guess.
Okay, so anyways, I was like, you know, this might be a really cool idea to do a little fun project. And, you know, in terms of knowing I was going to have this certain period where things were going to be a little rough, I have been somewhat, sometimes, like, I like to get my interest piqued by ideas in terms of the body, how the body functions and how we can manipulate it. And I guess nothing has really piqued my interest for the last couple months. So, I'm like, all right, let's see. Let's literally see how much damage we can do in 6 weeks. Kind of like let's try to do our supersize me type experiment, but with like a dude that's not going to McDonald's for every meal of the day. So I kept some pretty deep analysis throughout this and actually kept a journal going up on my Google Docs thing. I'll probably end up posting at some point, but just seeing how the body reacts. And I did have some certain guidelines that I had to follow. Like I still made sure I got in two of my greens, smoothies every day, because that's what's saved my intestinal tract. But I was just didn't worry about, you know, I was like, okay, if I want to have a slice of pizza with some friends or go get some pizza with my friends downtown, yeah, let's do it. Or, I didn't really count anything, but I allowed for some wiggle room. And it only, like I said, in about 6 weeks, the major things I noticed, sleep ends up getting worse. Pretty standard, we know that. And also, that set point thing is pretty rock solid. I felt like I tried to do some pretty deep damage, and I was only able to put on 6 pounds in 6 weeks. Like I feel like I would have done a lot worse. And this was like one of the big things was for a whole week I had a whole pizza every single day.
Good
and
for
I
you.
But in that week I put on 1 pound and I didn't do anything like really different. And that now I started thinking, like, okay, maybe this is pretty solid. And I wasn't exercising more. To be honest, I was exercising less and I was sleeping less. I was doing a lot of things wrong.
Well, you know what? I think that the potential question that you have to ask is, were you doing everything right beforehand? You know, I
oh, sure.
for example, I, I've You know what I mean? And I think that, like, for example, a lot of times when I pick up a new client, I'll have them, you know, most of the time I'm picking them up and I say, you know, what have you been doing? Well, I've been dieting for 8 months straight and I haven't taken a week off.
Yeah, but John,
off
you saw me right before this happened. Like, you, before I started doing this, and, like, you know, I'm pretty structured and pretty bland with my nutrition.
But that may be the case. What my point is that sometimes that break in the structure is actually a good thing. It will do beneficial things physiologically where, you know, so it, now going on a pizza binge may or may not be necessary, but at the same time, there's psychological influence when we take that rest break. There can be physiological influence when we take a rest break in a positive way, not just a negative way.
Yeah,
so
there can be hormonal influences with it.
Right, too, right, exactly. So,
but like I said, I expected a much worse, you know, much more damage. I'm like, you know, let's see if I could put on 2 pounds a week. And there was, I mean, I could expect a large peach is like 4,000 calories. So if we want to use the whole idea of, you know, a 3,500 calorie surplus is going to equal 1 pound of body fat. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's not exact. We have lots of things going on in our body. But I was just surprised. I'm like, all right, maybe the set point thing is pretty, you know, it is a pretty solid argument. And I was just surprised. I thought I could do a lot more damage. But going to the training type stuff is that I've been having, like I said, a little bit of a, you know, doldrums. I had a lot of help from John. He helped me fix my hip issue, which has been outstanding to not have to deal with that.
Nashville.
And the big thing that I've been doing is I do the program at Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning. I actually do the athletes program with the athletes. We have, like, depending on the time of day, I sometimes train with an adult group that does the athletes program, or like actual, I'll train with high school athletes, some that, you know, are a little bit stronger, like sometimes like the football groups. Just so, like, you know, we can kind of like stay in the same weight class in terms of, you know, trap bar deadlifting and benching and stuff like that. And I just found it, like, it's just been so great to, like, train with a group again and get not necessarily that I'm getting coached, but, you know, I'm having people spot me all the time, making sure that, you know, I'm finishing every single rep. And it is something that we tried to do at MBSC in terms of the staff, but we're just so spread out. We have so much stuff going on. We could never organize a staff lift. But this is kind of my way of getting back into having like a lifting partner and, you know, making sure I have a structured program. I'm like, I started thinking about, like, man, we write this program. Like, we know it covers all the bases, crosses all the T's, dots all the I's. We handle everything in terms of speed, activation, you know, if you want to call it like prehab type stuff, mobility. We do it all. So I'm like, why am I stressing out about this? I'm just going to jump in one of the groups, and it's been going great. It's probably like the most fun I've had training in a long time, and I've been working at the place for 2 years, and I never thought to just jump in with a group and train with a group instead of, you know, doing my own thing and listening to. The only thing I just don't get to do is I can't listen to DMX and Rage Against the Machine because it has swears and anger in the music. But
there's such a huge aspect of motivation when you train with others, and even myself, like I still enjoy going to the gym even though I train by myself, because quite frankly no one's really doing anything that I'm doing here anyway. They're all, you know, jumping on the cardio machines, but there's a motivation. I can't stand walking into the gym when no one's there. It bums me out. As soon as I open the door, no one's there, I'm like, ugh. You know, cause it's just too quiet, it's too empty. I like stuff going around, even if they're doing stupid stuff that is annoying to me. Like, at least someone's there and you just get that sense of like communal work. But when you have a good training partner, it makes all the difference in the world. I have typically been the guy that works out by himself. Like, I just always sort of do that, but it's always enjoyable when someone's like, hey man, I'm going to work in today. And you're like, all right, cool. You know, or you follow their programming or whatever it is. And that's a huge way to make games and to approach things that you don't normally do, because when you're either writing your own workouts or even if you're picking workouts, you'll gravitate towards the ones that you're most comfortable with. I love something, so I'm going to find a bench press in every workout that I do, or, you know, whatever.
Sure.
So, in fact, that was one of the motivations that I had, like I was saying, with this new stuff that I'm doing, because I was just looking for stuff that might, you know, be a little bit more challenging, a little more different, and was very interested in progressing core work and to getting more symmetrical because of the dysfunction I was having and some of the back pain and stuff. And I just kind of fell into, you know, the stuff like planches and whatever, and I was like, whoa, this stuff is impossible and it's humbling, you know. But at the same time, it's you're doing handstands and you're doing crazy stuff, and it's so challenging. And the first time that I was able to like catch a tuck planche and like get it into for like a split second and hit a planche, I was like flying. I mean, it was such an accomplishment, and I was so excited. And that's what's cool. But the month before, it's like you're not doing anything. You know, you feel so weak. It's very humbling. But sometimes you need that just to get yourself kickstarted and to find some new motivation in the gym when you're squatting every time you walk in and you're doing a bench press every time you walk in. You know, you need some of those things to be, in my opinion, just generally healthy. You know, if we're not athletes training for a specific sport or endeavor, I like the idea of having variety in training.
But so that's that. So I'm going to throw it out to you guys. What was the question? How do you like to train? No, what how do you like to get fired up? And maybe you can share it with some other people and they can get some ideas on how to mix things up a little bit. We're not talking about program hopping. We're talking about changing things up and maybe changing your goals up to do something fun for a little bit. Because what's the point if you're not having fun? More you know. All right, we're going to be right back with a mailbag. So, and by the way, post those on Facebook and just link or tag John and I in it. And that way it looks like we have more friends in real life. Thanks. Mailbag. John, you want to get the first question from Christina?
I certainly can. Hi, guys. Think the podcast is awesome and super informative. And she's complaining that we suck up the data time on AT&T. The question is this. I'm in a woman's training studio north of Boston, holla. The average client is a postmenopausal woman in the overweight to obese category. Recently, I've run across a handful of clients, women fitting into the morbidly obese category. Obviously, these women cannot do the exercises the average client can do. I do focus on more dynamic body weight type of training, swings, bench squats, and abductor band steps. Do you guys have any suggestions on working with the morbidly obese to get them to feel empowered, especially since they mostly feel defeated? Enough, any exercise that you have found very effective for the 270 plus pound group. Appreciate your help. Thanks, Christina. For Kevin.
Yeah, this is a good question that I think we might have hit on a little bit in the past.
A little bit.
But I would love to bring up one of my clients, Kara, who I think she was like my second client that I ever got professionally in the when I was at Boston Sports Club, and she was morbidly obese. She was pushing about 400. She had a adrenal gland issue. So she was running into problems with that, and she was on all kinds of medication trying to work that out. So she had a pretty high hurdle when she got in. But, you know, I think you have to kind of address it in a lot of ways like you would any other kind of new trainee or someone that, you know, isn't super strong when they first come into the gym. So what we did with her is we started with, you know, a lot of, you know, we started with a lot of like not full range of motion type stuff until she got comfortable in a lot of assisted stuff. One of the things that you can do is you can use things like a cable station or a TRX to do assisted work by letting her hold on to something and then like having her hold on to the TRXs and squat down to a box. Also, elevated push-ups, like as long as you're not perpendicular to the ground, you're going to be doing some work. And even if she is just like, you know, going up against the wall and, you know, doing some push-ups like that, you know, it's still going to be doing work. She's still going to raise her heart rate. She's still going to be, you know, doing a lot more than, you know, a lot more than it looks, you know, especially when you're pushing around that kind of volume. It can still be a very challenging work. The, you know, obviously when you're used to doing stuff like swings and more explosive type stuff, you're going to want to stay away from that, obviously. One of the things Kara loved was like any kind of like glute activation stuff that we did. So we did do like lots of band walks, lots of Frankenstein walks. We even did stuff that might be kind of frowned upon and, you know, from the functional crowd, we did some like low box step ups. We did do some dumbbell deadlift type stuff. Obviously we really didn't do any single leg deadlifting. I think for the most part, we never really did any single leg deadlifting, until towards the end, we did some single leg deadlift body weight stuff, reaching out towards the wall. And the big thing that I would really stress is whatever you do with that client, make sure they're not uncomfortable, because you just don't want to create an environment where they're like, you know, like, oh man, I'm really nervous. I gotta go into the weight room and, you know, I'm kind of self-conscious and I don't want to do anything that's going to look weird. You know, make sure that you express that a little bit, saying, you know, I know we got to get some certain things done, but if you're at all feel uncomfortable doing this stuff, just let me know. Because otherwise you'll lose her completely. So I would say start with some, you know, really simple stuff, and don't be afraid to do some, non full range of motion type exercises, as she gets comfortable with certain movement patterns. And dumbbells are your friend. You can still do plenty of dumbbell and cable stuff. If you have a cable station, it's going to be golden for any kind of rowing, anti-rotation, press type stuff, and use angles and gravity to your advantage. And you can always elevate stuff, or you know, have her do things at an angle to make things a little bit less stressful. But John, do you have anything to add to anything?
I want to hit on that emotional aspect that both you and Christina had mentioned. She mentioned that in her email, because I think that is the key there. You're dealing with the population. I mean, any population, you get a client in the gym, they've never been to the gym, they're intimidated, and they see these big guys and these thin, sexy girls working out, and they don't feel like part of that club. But for an overweight, obese client, they're not part of the club in society. You know, they know they're obese. That typically drives them in one way or another. They're aware of that. And you now are exposing every weakness that they have having stepped in the club. So I think that psychological game there is enormous, to the point where I throw out just about any rule of training that I have for someone like that, because my interest first and foremost is empowering them to feel confident, to know that they're making a step forward in the right direction with progress. Because most of the time, the obese client has already tried things that hasn't worked. They've tried dieting, they've tried the treadmill, they've tried things to get themselves thinner, and either they've had some success and then just fall right back, or they haven't had any success at all. So it's an entirely intimidating situation, and it's not a very inspiring situation either for most
for the most part. So that first part of that journey is empowering them, making them feel comfortable in your expertise and in your empathy and ability to understand what they're going through, even if you're not in that situation or have never been overweight or too obese. So for me, I don't care what they're doing. I want them to feel strong. I want them to be able to accomplish the tasks, to not feel bad about being out of shape or not being able to do something. At the same time, I want to challenge them enough that they feel that they are doing something. You know what I mean? You don't want to just give them 5-pound dumbbells and say, here, curl these, you know, because that's kind of nonsense too. So you're going to be very communicative to them and explaining the process and being their cheerleader and being in their corner and having to hold their hand a lot of times in the first early stages before they start to get it and they start to feel good and feel empowered and see the scale drop. And remember, even though we may talk about the idea that, you know, the scale is just a number and, you know, there are a lot of qualities of exercise, you know, that about exercise and things that you get out of it, their most important aspect is that scale. And that's not just a psychological thing. It's a health thing, too. They need to get that weight down. And I think that the best example that I've ever, you know, kind of encountered is simply just, you know, imagine doing your exercise by carrying someone else on you, because that's what they're going through every day with that excess body fat. So I think more than anything in the workout, it starts with their brain, their mind, and how they feel about you and how they feel about going to the gym. Once you get that out of the way, you can go into the demanding exercises, the challenge, you know, feeling invigorated through activity and all this stuff that we kind of believe as people that are motivated by health and exercise. But you have to get them there first. If you can get them there, you've got a successful client. But if you fail in that first step, you're never going to have success with them.
Exactly. So, you know, best of luck and patience, you know, on both sides.
Right. I mean, it's a challenging segment, and we've all worked with overweight and obese clients, but man, it is awesome to see what happens. The only other thing, though, that I would mention, and I've encountered this a few times too, I think that a lot of times, this may be a little bit of a late age sort of thing, not something to bring up in the beginning, but as client begins to see success, I think a lot of times, and this is true of anybody, but it seems to be true of the obese client as well from my experience, they go to the gym for a reason. Obviously, they want to get leaner. They want to, you know, be healthier. But most importantly, like, I mean, all of us, we talk about, oh, I want to look good naked. But for them, it's not even looking good naked. They want to have self-confidence. And unfortunately, they also assign a lot of the difficulties that they may have in other aspects of their life to their weight. I think we all sort of do that. Whatever we're insecure about, that becomes the reason why things aren't working, the things aren't going the way that we're planning. I think that's something to keep in mind, because if you see aspects of that in your client, it's important to make them understand that, you know, they may hit a weight goal and that may or may not have an influence on their dating life or their job performance and that raise or that bonus or that promotion that they're looking for. And sometimes they assign that and they don't even realize it. So it's something to keep in mind, because when you see that, the danger is they hit that, you know, weight goal, and then nothing else has changed in their lives. And I've seen people, I've lost people that way. I've absolutely lost people that way. They've gotten where they wanted to be, or they're within 10 pounds and they hit a plateau and nothing else is changing, and they never come into the gym again. And that is very painful as a trainer, as someone that you brought through, you know, literally months and months and years of training, and then they're gone. So it's just something from my experience that I've encountered, and I think it's worthwhile bringing up, because you may also encounter that as well.
All right, let's go on to the final question in the mailbag from Keith. Mm-hmm. Shoot this to you, John. He says, my question has to do with leg joints. When jogging, I use neoprene ankle brace and running sneakers. I'm up for a physical test which requires running. Is there anything more I could use to assist with joint protection? The reason for this is because I have had some work on an ankle during this run. I don't want to hurt myself and would like to stay as safe as possible. I'm also dropping some pounds to assist with the run. I'm currently approximately 210 pounds. I'm working to get back to 190. Any info you could provide would be appreciated. Thank you.
It's an interesting question. the difference between 210 pounds and 190 pounds, there will be a difference on the joints. I don't know that that's the first and foremost thing that I'm concerned about in this question. There's a little bit of information that I'd like to have when he says he's had some work done on an ankle. I'm not exactly sure what that means. My assumption is that he's twisted the ankle before, that he's had laxity issues, and maybe, you know, an ankle twist, once you have one, you just can constantly get them over and over again. My answer would, in general, be strength and proprioception, and that those are your two keys to improving ankle protection, ankle safety, especially while running. This is one of the few areas where the idea of unstable surface has evidence to support it in terms of ankle proprioception, learning positional strength. But the other more kind of global answer is probably something that has to do with the hip strength and ankle strength and foot strength. So you're really looking at your form, not only in running, but also in just in weightlifting in general. Is there weakness in the hip? I would argue that there probably is if you've had ankle inversion sprain or whatever in the past. There's probably weakness in the foot and the foot position and stability as well. This may also be a place where you can introduce some amount of barefoot training, either in the weight room or in the running as well. Now, with the running, I would suggest something that's a little different maybe than what you've heard before. And it's an interesting point that I picked up from Eric, who was a trainer for McDougal, who wrote Born to Run. So he was the guy that actually trained the author of that book. And his take is very interesting because he does train these marathon runners and ultra marathon runners. And he's kind of like, he's the guy that taught McDougal about barefoot running. And yet he said himself that most of the time for most of his athletes, his barefoot running is only in training, short sprints and mid-range, you know, runs. He doesn't necessarily tell his athletes, go out and run the marathon barefoot. And I think that that's a really, really interesting point. He uses barefoot training for the intrinsic strengthening of the foot and the ankle and the hips, but not necessarily as something you do throughout your run, just the same way that you might do squats or lunges to improve your sprint times, but you're not going to sprint by lunging down the race, you know? So that's something that I might consider here. There are no real there's no evidence-based methodology to improve your barefoot running. You know, we don't have a set scheme or training program. Most of us will agree that you're going to do it step by step. So, you know, you might choose to run one or two hundreds in a low shot footwear, call it a day. The following week, you might add another 100 to it or something like that. You could be 10% of your training per week, you know, along those lines. And you do that in a periodized fashion. So you give yourself the time to expose yourself to the new stimulus and to recover from it, just like you would any other training protocol. So between strengthening the intrinsic of the foot, which barefoot running might be part of, or barefoot training, by strengthening the hips to control the position of the knee and the ankle, therefore, as you make ground contact. And then to overall, if you have the access to a qualified running coach, instructor, or physical therapist that deals with runners, and actually a podiatrist may also be someone that you can look to for that, that can assess your running form and find any problems that are having with the foot strike, with control, I think you're going to have a better chance of avoiding those inversions if that's what it is that we're talking about. But overall, the footwear can be a part of that solution, but I don't typically go there first, because to me, if you're having repeated injuries, that's an issue of strength and joint and proprioception, neuromuscular, not just if I'm wearing Nikes or Reeboks. So you can try to look there.
I think that is where we're going to wrap things up, but I'm going to remind you again to let us know about your training style, what you like to do. And again, just mention John and or I on Facebook. You can also send in your fresh questions to questions@thefitcast.com. Just make sure they're extra fresh.
So fresh and so clean.
Yep. So I think that is going to be about it. We should be back on a regular schedule of posting on Monday before noon. Hopefully I can edit this right now and get it up. So John doesn't send an assassin from Mars?
Pretty much. Dude, Assassin's Creed 3 is going to be sick.
Yeah, so that is going to be...
I'm so excited.
That's going to be it. Until then, we're going to go with Tomahawk some Redcoats. See you next time.
That's right.
That's a reference, by the way, for a video game, so we're not going to kill people. Gotta make that clear. Okay, see you next week. We're back with some off-topic stuff. I'll start. John, have you seen The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
I have not yet. Some of the list of things to do, though, are very, very, very good things.
Okay, it's out on Blu-ray.
It's also out on iTunes.
Exactly.
Because that's, yeah.
That movie was amazing. That's all I'm going to say about it. And I can't wait for the next one. I'm so bummed that the next one's not out yet.
Yeah, my dad saw it. He was telling me about it. He said it was pretty righteous, very intense.
What have you been doing, John?
Just laying low, getting ready for my vacation. And then we've got a Paris trip coming up, and then we've got our gala summer trip where part of it, I believe everything is set, is going to be Italy and Turkey as two of the stops, which I'm really looking forward to both of those. So, life will be good coming up.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah. Sounds like you are excited for me.
Yeah, it's lots of traveling. It should be plenty of pictures for your new camera.
Damn right. That is 100% correct. And then today, the gym has been closed for the past 2 days for maintenance, so I had an old school outdoors in the playground workout. I should have recorded it and put it on YouTube for the outdoor workout YouTube contingent. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, you could have totally sold an ebook.
Right?
Take some pictures, sell an ebook. All right, you probably didn't watch WrestleMania last night.
No, somehow I had something else to do, I'm sure.
It was bad. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Go figure. Who was in it? Wasn't there like a big to-do? Like they gave a lifetime achievement to someone or something crazy or
no? The big thing was it was Rock versus Cena. The Rock came back for a match.
Ah, that's what it was.
After being away for I think like 6 years or 8 years or something like that.
Right, having a real career, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and he was like they pussyfooted around the whole thing. It was pretty boring.
Hmm.
So that was awesome. That's pretty much all I got, man.
Yeah, that's fun.
There's a new show called Awake that is outstanding. About a guy that...
What's that?
It's about a guy who can't tell if he is awake or asleep. He was in a car accident with his wife and his son.
Yeah, didn't you... I think you mentioned that last time. Like, I think last time recorded 2010, you had mentioned it.
Yeah, but now they're... That was a preview. Now they got the full series going.
All I know is everybody is buzzing over Game of Thrones. That's like the new hotness. Yeah, neither have I. They don't have it here, so I have no choice. But that seems to be the new hotness.
I don't like the medieval type stuff. I can't really get into that. Like Lord of the Rings, it's not my thing.
It's sad for you.
Eh. I mean, I do all right.
I enjoy it. It always just makes me giggle that by definition, everyone in medieval times has to either, most like 90% will be English, and then the rest will be German. Those are the accents, and it doesn't matter where you are. If it's Rome, accents are English, and if it's like the middle of Constantinople, the accents are English. It's amazing.
Well, it's all based off of Doctor Who. That's why.
Sure. Yes.
Everyone always speaks with an English
right.
accent. Always.
Or they're German when they're like hardcore, and that's because they're dramatic. So apparently, the only two societies that have ever existed in the history of the earth were English and German, according to Hollywood.
In America, there's a lot of America.
Not in ancient history. Learn your history, dude. Ancient history, only England and Germany. And anyone that lived anywhere else in the world were still English or German by accent.
Yeah, but with the ancient alien theory, you know, anything is possible.
I actually have a dubstep where they took samples from that show. I was cracking up.
It's a good, captivating television show. All right, I think that might be about it. We almost capped off 4 minutes and 50 seconds of off topic and got a firm grasp of your terrible internet connection this morning.
Apparently so.
Do I sound all right on your end?
You never sound all right.
Man. Trying to think what people would be interested in us talking about. Oh, you know
Anything. Anything. You'd be interested in anything. We haven't recorded in like 5 years.
I got the soundtrack for The Social Network last night on Amazon for $6. That was pretty awesome.
Did you get a soundtrack?
It's a really good soundtrack for like work. It's Trent Reznor. You know, it's very Trent Reznor-y.
Right.
But then, because I looked it up, because he also did the soundtrack for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which I didn't really remember, but I thought the music was kind of good in it, and it was like really boring compared to the Social Network stuff, which you wouldn't figure, but go figure. I'm picking up arcade machine today.
Fun.
Donkey Kong Jr. The little brother. Actually, it's the son of Donkey Kong.
Son, hence the junior.
Yeah.
Donkey Kong the second.
Did you ever play any of that when you were a kid growing up?
I believe that I did.
I think we had it
Many,
for the
many,
Atari.
many years ago.
Yeah. Well, how old are you now? What are you, like 26?
Yeah, I'm 20. Fuck God, yeah, I'm 26. That'd be wonderful.
You're not that much older than me, though.
I'm a lot older than you.
That's all right, though. You've accomplished so much more.
Yep. Sitting in the desert.
Yeah, but think about all the Four Season hotels where you've stolen the soap from.
I've stolen a lot of soaps from a lot of Four Seasons, dude. I don't even have to buy shampoo.
Be honest
That's
though.
how
Be honest though. Have you
dumb.
ever given those away as like gifts to people? Like, oh, I got you these fancy shampoos.
No, because it's pretty obvious, but in a sense I have because my parents love that. So they'll be like, when I come home for vacation, they're like, bring us some soap. I'm like, I use the soap. Like, just bring us the soap. I'm like, all right. So I pack a few bottles and give it to them, and they
All
feel
right.
very high class.
Here, let's talk about this, dude.
Yeah.
Let's talk about people still not getting that if you click on like stupid shit on Facebook or like that says like video look at this of like hot chick doing something racy or a celebrity do
It's
something
gonna
racy,
show up on
that it's gonna show up
Facebook.
that you clicked on something that makes you look
Yeah.
like a total creeper now.
Yeah,
Like
it cracks me
this
up.
is like fucking two excuse me, this is 2012, guys.
Wow, swear words.
Like,
Yeah, I that does crack me up.
and it is like the same thing with like people and like all over the place, like still don't know how to like use like I guess there's no right way to use Facebook, but there's definitely some wrong ways to use Facebook. I've used it like partially for social, but a lot of business stuff. And I just feel like still for like the business side of things, people just don't like, they still haven't like kind of grasped, you know, they think Facebook is something much more than it is sometimes. Or maybe not. I don't know. I'm really tired. I only got like 4 hours sleep last night, and you can probably hear that I sound terrible and I'm sick. So that's cool. I don't know, man. I think that's all I got, but I have been pretty much addicted to ordering stuff on Amazon instant video streaming. And I'll be honest, like, dude, like back in college and stuff, like sometimes you would kind of hit up the, you know, the not so legal sources to get some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But like now that it's actually easy to grab stuff, like I'm more than happy to pay $4 to watch a movie, or, you know, I've been getting Fringe through Amazon streaming the next day. More than happy to, you know, pay the $2 for an episode, but I would never pay $2 for like a 30-minute episode of a television show. I don't know why that's the same. It's $2 for an episode of like How I Met Your Mother, or $2 for an hour long TV show like House or Fringe. That's the thing they gotta fix.
Right,
and I also ordered Total Recall and Blu-ray yesterday for $5.
I was watching that the other day.
It's a great movie, huh?
Yeah. You know, they're doing a remake.
Yeah, and I think that's why. No, I saw that trailer that you posted. That's why I ended up buying it, I think. But actually, did you see, you saw that sneak preview for the trailer?
Of Total Recall? No.
Oh, maybe that wasn't you.
That wasn't me.
No, they have a trailer for
like
it
a teaser.
Yeah, no, it's like a good 45-second song.
Yeah, it's usually a teaser.
I think it was a teaser for the teaser. But here, it's on trailer-addict.com.
Okay, cool. It. Yeah, send it over. Watch it.
What we'll do is we're gonna pause this. We're gonna let John watch it and then get his reaction. We'll be right back. Well, I mean, we'll just continue, but you'll think
that. Wow. Oh.
Okay, John's still kind of finishing it up, but I didn't realize the full trailer came out. The thing that I saw the other day was like a 40-second clip of like the trailer's coming next week. And I guess.
Wow.
Dude, that movie looks effing awesome.
That looks ridiculous. Wow.
That might be the best trailer that I've seen this year.
I
can you name anything? Like, look in that Trailer Addict page. Okay, Prometheus looks pretty dope too.
Yeah, Prometheus. It's better than the Spider-Man trailer, but the kind of the anticipation of Spider-Man is pretty high for me. But that looks very good. That looks visually – like there's a whole – you know, like I'm on Rotten Tomatoes a lot and I read about the new movies. I'm a big movie buff. And
slash film.
Film. And, you know, there's a big argument about all of these remakes and why do we need to make these remakes. And there are some that are valid. And remakes aren't anything new because they've done them for years. But there seems to be a whole slew of them. And they're doing – you know, a movie comes out 5 years ago and they're remaking it, that, like Spider-Man – and people are getting a little sick of it, but there is a good reason when you feel that the modern technology and the way that storytelling is done can do a better job than the original, or at least a better job for modern times. Like the old one doesn't quite stand up. For me, the old one still stands up, but there are definitely some, like, you know, when you're talking about the future, quote unquote, there's some things that you could do in a modern interpretation that would be a little bit more realistic to the technology that we have today. That looked very good.
Well, just like, Star Trek is the prime example of how you can make a franchise better and put a lot more life into it.
Right. But even then, I wouldn't even argue that the new Star Trek movie was better. It was just a different interpretation, because those old movies are really good and the old series is really good. Yeah. And if you put it into context, you know, that's kind of like Star Trek The Next Generation. It wasn't a remake of the original Star Trek. It was just a continuation. And as a continuation, there was differences in technology and whatever. And now it's dated too, except that it's still – there's still a lot – you know, it's the storytelling itself – that to me is what a remake should be about. It should be about the storytelling. if we can do a better story that has to do with technology, which has to do with movie filmmaking, blah, 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 then it might be worthwhile to remake it. But these movies that are done and they're kind of flops, and then 5 years later someone comes around and says, let's do it again, we can do it better, that's annoying. But something like this, that looked very good. It could be very worthwhile.
Well, it looks like they definitely put the money behind it.
Yeah.
The visual effects look
incredible.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That just got me pumped, dude. I want to watch that again.
Let's record, man.
We're
answer some questions, man.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. Go watch. Go to traileraddict.com. Check out the...
Go to my Facebook. I'm going to post that thing up.
Yeah, let John get some hits on his Facebook.
I need friends. I need the friends.
Click on it. Click on his affiliate link to check out that Trailer Addict trailer. And let's record a show.